An interview with Monica Riley of the biology department on November 5th, 88, at my house.
Okay. I've done 64. You're the 65th.
My goodness, that's a major effort.
Well, I've taken something for my time about it.
Yes.
As all the way from Florida up to Albany, Schenectady. Different people live in different parts of the country. And now I have a green light to go out to California and interview John Lee, who was the first president back in Rusty Bay. Basically, we're interested in those who were important in the creation and the development of Stony Brook. And that includes governors if they're as such. Unfortunately, Rockefeller and Dewey and Harriman are all gone.
Yes.
Did you get this letter from Jerry Shewell? You may not have. Don't touch it, I would.
Okay. No.
Well, let me read it to you.
All right.
There has recently been considerable discussion of the need for a history of the creation and early development of the State University of New York at Stony Brook. The record of Stony Brook's rise to a place of prominence in American higher education is one of which we in the state of New York can be justly proud. How did this noteworthy development take place so quickly, and what combination of factors contributed to the present stature of this institution? Although no immediate volume is projected, it became clear during the discussions that many of those responsible for the early decisions and fundamental support were no longer living. Their memories are no longer available for answers to the questions who, why, or how. We could cite, for example, Governor Dewey, Harriman, and Rockefeller, Board of Trustees Chairman Frank Moore, SUNY President Tom Hamilton, Stony Brook Council Chairman Ward Melville and Justice William L. Sullivan, Vice President for Personnel in the Central Office, David Price, Stony Brook Dean Stanley Ross, Lester Evans and Malcolm Muir of the Muir Commission. Former Provost Harry Porter is living, but has had a stroke. Not only can they not be interviewed, but their files are either scattered and mothballs or destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the this went to some of the older faculty who were either retired or active somewhere else. Faculty and administration. I interviewed Ed Pellegrino and John Toll and Sam Gould, the chancellor, and a good many others, Larry Murray up in Albany. So, I have some questions. And I'll start off with the simple ones just to peg you as to where you are. Name, department, rank, or position.
Monica Riley, Department of Biochemistry, Professor of Biochemistry.
What year did you come to Stony Brook?
I came in the fall of 66.
And how old were you at the time?
I would have been 39.
I see. From what institution and position did you come?
I came from the University of California at Davis, where I was an assistant professor. I had been there about 5 years.
And who was primarily responsible for your coming to Stony Brook?
Frank Eric recruited me. Arthur Pardee, who was my PhD mentor.
Where?
When we were both at University of California, Berkeley. But by this time, Art Pardee was at Princeton, and I was at Davis. And Art Pardee heard about the development of the Stony Brook campus, and he knew that I was looking to move somewhere, and I started interviewing around. And so he suggested it both to me, and then he wrote, I suppose he wrote Frank Erick to suggest my name.
Was Frank Channing when you came?
Yes.
I see. All right. And so when you came here, who interviewed you?
Frank.
Frank.
Then, well into the process, I think really we had a verbal understanding that we were happy with each other. I was introduced to Mel Simpson, who was also being recruited the same year. And so we were introduced to each other at a time when we were both visiting the campus and spoke together.
Biochemistry.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, the biochemistry department did not exist then. It was one biology department, but I think the presumption was that Mel was called head of a group or some such name that wasn't a department, but it was a subdivision within the biology department.
The department had started off in what way? Somebody
the biochemistry department?
No, not biochemistry.
Oh, biology. Gosh, that was before my time.
Was it descriptive?
Oh, you mean the type of biology?
Yes.
Well, I guess it started as a science teacher's unit. In the beginning. It was oriented towards a normal school type of curriculum to turn out teachers in the area of science for junior and senior high school. And then in the transition of changing that
mandate
into a broader one, which would include setting up research programs and entering into forefront scientific investigations, that was a huge change that was asked of the department. So it took a while.
Right. Why did you come? What factors were important in your decision?
Well, I was very taken by the fact that this was a developing and growing campus. That was very rare. All the other places that I went to, and by the way, one of the places I interviewed was Buffalo in the SUNY system, and to me there was no comparison between the two because of the fact that Stony Brook was at this exciting beginning stage of major growth and shaping. And so personally I felt that I would have a chance to be sort of in on the ground floor idea, to be a part of helping to make it grow.
John Toll was here then.
Yes. In fact, I remember the reception that he held for new faculty that fall, fall of 66, that was in the gym. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed. There was a receiving line for new faculty. I think that the reception was for the entire faculty, which was around 300 people then, I think. And the new faculty were coming through, and I was so impressed that when given my name, John Toll said, oh, it's good to have somebody here in DNA. He had learned what the specialties were of all the incoming faculty that fall.
Right. He had a remarkable memory.
Mm-hmm.
Very many, many things right up front.
Mm-hmm.
All the time, simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's what was your understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook? What was the vision being transformed in reality?
Well, the way I understood it, which was partly reading Time magazine, gave me the idea of where we were supposed to be going, was that Rockefeller, the Governor Rockefeller, had looked at higher education in New York State and found it not up to the major state university systems like California and Michigan and so on, and that there was no reason for New York State to tied his candle, and that he was ready. And Stony Brook was singled out among all of the four major university centers as one that would be developing from a very small unit to a very large unit with major responsibilities to become a forefront university in terms of the process of acquiring knowledge as well as the process of communicating knowledge to students.
Is there 10, 15?
Yes.
And forefront on a national scale, rather than simply a state scale.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Those two ideals have fought each other in the state. What were your impressions of Stony Brook when you first came to the campus, the people, the leadership, and the spirit?
I think the spirit was very good, very upbeat. The campus physically was kind of a mess because it was in the mud days when there were huge ditches being dug all the time. But that never bothered me because that was a necessary part of this expansion. I remember a snowstorm the first winter where many of us biology faculty found ourselves in the biology building on a Friday afternoon, I think it was. And it was, oh yes. Illustrating the fact that there was a camaraderie among us. There were only maybe 12 faculty in the biology department at that point, or 13. And being temporarily stranded in the building because of an unexpected snowstorm, it turned into a time of great fellowship and personal ties were developed, I think, from being kind of cooped up together under those circumstances.
Well, suppose you tell me how you saw or how you see the evolution of the department.
Well, as I said, it was a single biology department when I first came. And as I understood it, the plan was to gradually build specialty areas. It was not too clear just how administratively those specialty areas would be handled, but that it would just develop and naturally fall into place, I think, was the idea. Well, biochemistry was the first discipline, too, because of the presence of Mel Simpson, who'd been brought on board specifically. I think he had the title chief or something. It was not a chairman title, but he was chief of and responsible for recruiting in that area. So that was the first area to get a sizable number of people to the point that it seemed to warrant making that a department. Well, if the biochemistry people were a department, within the biology department, it didn't make sense to have the word department being used in a hierarchical situation. It was called division for a while, the biochemistry division. But then, of course, it didn't have its own budget or have any formal administrative existence. And as the biochemistry unit developed strength and character and needed to follow its own course and to state its own needs specifically, then it became an issue that it be a department. And I think that probably went back and forth a while, because that meant that biology had to assume a hierarchically higher state in order to include a biochemistry department. And so ultimately that was done, and biology became a division in the same sense as arts and humanities or social sciences divisions. And then organizationally, it made sense certainly on paper. Then you could foresee the establishment of other departments within that division in other areas of specialization in biology.
Such as what?
At that time, that's right, that brings back to me that there was a problem with cellular biology.
Bob Marion? Yes,
and with the concept of cell biology, whether cell biology should be a part of the biochemistry department or separate from it. Now, a lot of the problems in setting up a satisfactory administrative structure in the area of biology are due to the fact that disciplines overlap, and you can arrange biology in two different ways that are at right angles to each other. One would be the level of investigation, starting smallest with molecules and then organs and individuals and populations. The other is the nature of the creature you're investigating, whether it's bacteria or animals or plants, or pieces of animals like the nervous system. And some of the trouble in trying to make a coherent organizational structure came from the fact that those two ways of dividing biology up were being used simultaneously. And that leads to trouble. Now, biochemistry, the word, says that you are investigating things at a chemical or molecular level. Cellular means that you're a unit more complex than that. You are investigating at the cellular level. And many biochemists apply their molecular tools to cellular questions. Other types of biologists who don't use molecular tools, who use other kinds of tools, also are interested in how the cell works. And so this is typical of the many problems that came up in organizing biology, that there were cell biologists in biochemistry department and there were cell biologists that were not biochemists that investigated at the cellular level with other sorts of tools. So then who gets the word cellular in their departmental title? And biochemistry wanted the word partly because it put them in a better position to get NIH support, training grant support, where NIH felt that a totally molecular department was too narrow, that it needed to also have cell biology in it. And in fact, we got that critique on one of our on our first attempt to get a training grant from NIH, which failed, and they gave us a critique, and that was the main thing that was found wanting. So that was typical of many other, that I wasn't directly involved in, so I don't remember as well, many other tussles about trying to carve out areas that were non-overlapping areas, and it was not possible. We ended up with overlapping areas of all kinds, and with graduate programs that had broader memberships than the departments did. And this is done in other places. It wasn't that Stony Brook was the only place. The nature of biology often leads to these overlapping arrangements, so that an individual faculty member often belong to more than one graduate program, because of the interdisciplinary nature of the work. But you can imagine a nightmare of complexities from the administrative standpoint. Now, there was cellular and comparative biology was the name of a department within the biology division in those early days, and then neurobiology and behavior. I think that's right.
That was not in psychology, then?
No. In fact, the ties to psychology were never strong.
Was it?
And you would think they might have been, but I don't know why it didn't develop.
What was your own field?
Biochemistry.
Biochemistry.
Well, I came into that the first group that budded off, you might say.
Yes.
I was in that group. And then there were five altogether at the largest number, I think, of subgroups in the biology division. That was biochemistry, cellular and comparative biology, which contained many of the people who were here and started the department to begin with. Neurobiology and behavior, ecology and evolution. No, there were four. So those were the four divisions.
Ecology and evolution together.
Yes.
Yeah. Have your expectations for the department and your own career worked out as you had originally planned?
I think by and large the answer would be yes to that. There have been some disappointments. More hassling along the area that we were just talking about, the organizational hassling, than I think any of us wanted.
Yeah.
It took time that we shouldn't have had to give to really unproductive back and forth.
Did you get any help from the administration on that?
Well, the administration would appoint us blue ribbon study committees, and it was analyzed over and over. You know, to this day, I don't understand why we had more difficulties in that area here at Stony Brook than is typical of other universities. Other universities handled the biology question in one of two ways, and they work equally well. One is one huge biology department where there are no distinctions at all made in the different sub-disciplines, and there's one head who works for all included. And the other way is division. MIT has a large single biology department. They did butt off a little applied biology a few years ago, but they just canceled that as a separate unit, and those people are subsuming under the single biology once more. Harvard, on the contrary, has zillions of individual departments that we would classify as biology, both in the medical school and on the Harvard College itself. And both MIT and Harvard do extremely well in these areas and have people of great note and great accomplishment. So there's no right or wrong way to do it. But for some reason that I certainly don't know what it is, there was pulling and tugging, much too much pulling and tugging over the years. Now, I would say it has settled down now. And there's much, well, or else I've withdrawn myself from the arena. I don't know. I started to say there's much less a wasted motion in this respect now, but maybe that's because I'm not in that arena. I don't have an administrator.
Well, when did Jones come?
He was here when I came in 66, as was Vince Cirillo. Both of them were already here.
What was Jones's first name?
Ray.
Ray Jones. Mm-hmm. He was an Englishman, wasn't he?
Scott, was he? Yes, he was English, and his wife was Scottish, yes.
Mm-hmm. Trained in England?
Oh, I think so. Yes, that's right. That brings back memories. He passed through Arthur Parvey's lab at some point, probably as a postdoc, the man who was my PhD mentor, because that made a tie when I first came. We knew some of the same people. I think he may have come to the States for postdoctoral training, but that's something I couldn't be sure about.
But he came as chairman?
No, he came as a faculty member. And I would have to go back in my files to see what year it was, but there was a year when the pulling and tugging over biology got so acute that somehow at that time we saw as a solution I suppose at the time it became a division, was no longer a department, and the biochemistry department became an entity with Mel Simpson in charge then, who was to be head of the larger unit, the overall unit, would it be Frank Kirk continuing or a new person? And the sentiment was for a new person. And Ray Jones took that job, so then he was head of biology division. There were a few things that in 2020 hindsight one would do differently. One being that the biology building was the old red brick building, was getting small for all of us, and the divisional office was set up across the way in the old chemistry building. So that Ray Jones and his assistant and secretarial help and so forth was in a different building. And in looking back, I think we would all say that some other function should have been put in the main building, because there was kind of a separation there that was not good. We should have somehow maintained that camaraderie, which Ray was a part of from the early days, but he became quite distant then.
Were your were your activities confined to the Stony Brook campus? Did you have relations outside?
I had lots of relations. We all, in the area of science that I'm a part of, we're very much in touch with each other in our discipline. There are meetings, large meetings, small meetings, and there are invitations to come and give talks to each other, and there is just a lot of not only national but international also contact in your area.
Did you, as a department or a division, invite other people to come to a conference here at Stony Brook?
Well, we didn't hold a conference at Stony Brook, but we always had a series of invited speakers coming through, a weekly series.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What kind of support did you get from the administration? From Stan Ross did you yourself have anything to do with John Toro? How much understanding was there outside of the division of biology?
I think they have to speak for themselves, but I think that the administrative officers probably just threw up their hands and shook their head and did not understand what all this fuss was. It kept coming year after year in one guise or another, that biology never seemed to settle down and be content.
Were these personalities?
Some of it was.
Yes.
Some of it was. But I think that in the beginning, the researcher-oriented people felt that the administration didn't understand their particular needs.
What do you feel that you have accomplished at Stony Brook, let's say by the time John Toll left?
What year was that?
78.
78, Actually published in 78 was probably my best work. It was a, in the guise of a review article, but it was actually a contribution of ideas in the field that the specialty area that I ended up in, which was evolution of DNA of bacteria. And to this day, that article is still highly cited, even though usually 10 years, you have long since lost, you know, the relevance of your remarks have gone in 10 years and a review article. But this was the best thing I had done. So actually, I could almost see my scientific contributions rising and peaking in that year. In order to do the science, though, as is true everywhere, but mostly in state universities, you have to create the possibility yourself. You have to apply for external funds, hire people to be technicians in your lab. You have graduate students, and there's where your efforts are going in two directions at once. Graduate education and research are two sides of the same coin. Is there still an update in there?
This is fine. The little light is the thing to watch.
Well, it's still on.
Yes.
So you're a little entrepreneur,
yes.
A little business person in a way, in doing research. And the administration makes it possible by providing a building with space and the proper utilities, and the rest is up to you.
Yeah.
Any other comments that you would like to make? What about the quality of students?
What about faculty life outside the department?
Do we have
a company of scholars?
No, I don't think we do. Now, maybe in other areas of arts or humanities there is such a thing, but not that impinges. Has impinged on my life here. Even when we had the faculty club, which I thought was an excellent idea to have one in the chemistry.
It started it again.
Building, and maybe this time it'll play the role that we would all hope for. But I found
Jerry Schubel has that idea very strongly in mind.
Yeah. Well, it's going to need something besides making the physical space. And food and service, I don't know what it is that makes it so hard at Stony Brook to get a collegiality established. I don't know what the extra ingredient is that we're missing. Something else I thought of in there.
Is it leadership from the administration? Or is it the qualities that people look for when they are hiring do they get people who carry their specialty in a much broader context, much broader frame of reference?
Mm-hmm. Well, you have more opportunity there in the non-science areas. I think in if you're going to have a full-fledged research university, then in the science areas you're going to have specialists. There's no way around it. Specialists in their own work, but some scientists have a broad view and some don't. That's true. That's true. Yeah, that's the thought. I hadn't thought of that from that point of view, and I can think now of particular scientists, for instance, at Harvard, who maintain their own specialized work and have a broad view at the same time. Yeah, George Wald with the freshman class, for instance, and we don't have any Walds, or at least not that I can think of at the moment, anyway. I don't know that the administration was in a position to help us. I think we had to help ourselves.
Why?
Well, Bentley Glass, wait, let me go back on that, because I'm just remembering the years when Bentley Glass was academic vice president, so we had a biologist in a position of importance, and he did help. He did do all he could. He had certain ideas that never worked out of, for instance, establishing a genetics unit, and I agreed with him. I thought that would be an excellent thing to do. But for the reasons I gave before of things going in different directions, genetics goes across the boards, is used for many different purposes, in all the way from populations to molecules. And so population people and molecular people felt they were being preempted if you said genetics. So you can see that this was endless. This turmoil was just endless, any idea. But Bentley Glass, I think it was definitely to our benefit when he had the job of academic vice president. We didn't always agree with what he was trying to do, but our existence and our promise for the future was well known, because he never let that be forgotten. At other times, I think we were sort of on our own to try and solve these internecine warfare and just try and do the best job we could. Now, I would say that at last, now there's some maturity, that a lot of the furor has died away. For one thing, in fact, we do have a collection of very strong, at least we think we're strong, departments, and no one is totally overshadowing any of the others, and that's a great help. There are many people now, particularly in the neurobiology department, that are really forefront in their field, and that helps, because some of these little arguments are just so beneath them that they can set a tone. That helps to set a tone. And there's another factor. Well, it's hit a stride. The biochemistry department continues to have a difficult position in that it's the only department that has two bosses, one in the medical school and one on the college campus, and that means that everything the biochemistry department does in the way of recruiting or anything that has fiscal consequences is a little harder to arrange, because each boss says, why don't you go get what you need from the other one. So it uniquely continues to have that problem. And there are cycles of finding, thinking that the solution is to move completely into the medical school or completely into the College of Arts and Sciences. And looking back over the long years now, I would say that there's just sort of a cycle that the subject comes up every so often, and there are reasons why being completely in one or the other is not good. And so the department remains split with two bosses and two sources of funds for its faculty and two sets of teaching responsibilities. The only, probably the only solution to that dichotomy would be to establish another biochemistry department, either in the medical school or in the College of Arts and Sciences, which is what many universities have. But with the history now, this many long, long years of the status quo, I think that would not be workable at this point. It might have been the thing to do years ago, to be more traditional. We were very untraditional in having the idea, I think it was John Toll's idea, having the idea of one department to serve both needs, the undergraduates and the professional students.
Well, I think that was the basic concept of the Muir Commission.
Oh, yes, that's right. It goes back to that.
One reason they came out in their report recommending that the first new health science center be at Stony Brook.
Mm-hmm.
They told me when they came in unannounced to my office, I'd been there about three months,
mm-hmm.
that they were inclined to place a new comprehensive health science center on the campus of a growing institution,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully have the two administrative responsibilities meshed. They didn't want to start off in an institution where all the administrative structure was set in concrete.
Yes.
And because they were afraid that there would be too much of a split. And they felt that they wanted to have a close connection between medicine and the PhD in biology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's as close as they could.
Mm-hmm. It's an admirable objective. I think the reason it's a little hard to achieve is that the medical community has a tradition of autonomy that means that they just don't it's hard for them to meld in with other administrative units, because the implication is that some of their own self-determination would be lost then, and so that's what's made it hard, I think. So Stony Brook had some idealistic goals, and in practical terms, not all of them were achievable just because of human nature or tradition in certain disciplines.
Agreement for some people is difficult because it seems to be, it seems to result in a lack of individual autonomy. If you agree with somebody, and you've lost your individuality.
Yes, yes.
And that's, I think, at the basis of the rather humorous remark that a faculty member, definition of a faculty member, is a person who thinks otherwise.
yeah, that's right. I think Sidney Gelber had a very synthetic mind.
Yes.
He could seek constructive interrelationships and would foster them.
Yeah. Well, that's the philosophical inclination.
Well, yes, that's true, it would be. And I imagine that it would be frustrating to him to have to deal with this other attitude of separatism from the medical people.
Is there anything else that you can think of that ought to go into the record for somebody later on who was trying to work out a history of the institution? What's the quality, or let's say, what is the standing of Stony Brook in your field, to think of?
I think probably realistically it would, of course, it would be different in each one of the subdivisions, and probably neurobiology is top of the heap right now, as it may stand now. But realistically, with all the other academic institutions in the country, I would put us at maybe 15 or 20, which may not sound too good, but actually there are so many institutions of top excellence, Harvard, MIT, Caltech, University of California, Berkeley, that you've got the first 10 locked up with these very eminent institutions, and you can really, a new institution can only begin to try and establish itself after that. So to be certainly in 10 and maybe 5 of the excellent ones, I think is a wonderful achievement over this short period of time. And I think that the single most important moves that have been made that have had that consequence in biology has been the recruitment. And this is something I was forgetting before, where the administration was helpful. When a person of major accomplishment is being recruited, and the light's still on.
All right.
In our field, it's the custom to offer a good deal of tangible assets
support
to the person, and equipment running in the hundreds of thousands of